Okay. Part of the eye.
Hey, everybody. I'm Amanda. I'm an addict.
Hey, Amanda.
And we were talking before this meeting. We don't have any whiteboards, worksheets, or handouts. We just have experience, strength, and hope to share with you guys today on recovery and relapse. And I'm going to start by reading chapter 7 from our basic text, which is called Recovery and Relapse. It's where the workshop topic came from, and some sections from this. Although all addicts are basically the same in kind, we do as individuals differ in degree of sickness and rate of recovery. There may be times when a relapse lays the groundwork for complete freedom. At other times, that freedom can only be achieved by a grim and obstinate willingness to hang on to abstinence come hell or high water until a crisis passes. An addict who by any means can lose, even for a time, the need or desire to use has a free choice over impulsive thinking and compulsive action, has reached a turning point that may be the decisive factor in his recovery. The feeling of true independence and freedoms hangs here at times in the balance. To step out alone and run our own lives again draws us. Yet we seem to know that what we have has come from a dependence on a power greater than ourselves and from giving and receiving of help from other in acts of empathy. Many times in our recovery, the old bugaboos will haunt us. Life may again become meaningless, monotonous, and boring. We may tire mentally in repeating our new ideas and tire physically in our new activities. Yet we know that if we fail to repeat them, we will surely take up our old practices. We suspect that if we do not use what we have, we will lose what we have. These times are often the periods of our greatest growth. Our minds and bodies seem tired of it all, yet the dynamic forces of change or true conversion deep within may be working to give us the answers that alter our inner motivations and change our lives. And then it goes on to say, to improve ourselves takes effort. And since there is no way in the world to graft a new idea on a closed mind, an opening must be made somehow. Since we can only do this for ourselves, we need to recognize two seemingly inherent enemies, apathy and procrastination. And I start with that because grafting a new idea on a closed mind was probably the most difficult thing for me when I first got here. I was introduced to the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous over 9 years ago, and I have 7 years clean because I'm not a one-chip, white-chip wonder. I came into this fellowship really willing to do a lot of things for a lot of reasons, but I'm not really sure recovery was one of them. I was willing to get out of jail. I was willing to get off paper. I was willing to get a sheet signed. I was willing to put my court fines behind me. I was willing to not get kicked out of rehabs. But I wasn't really willing, I think, to consider the idea that I might be an addict. And I wasn't willing to really apply the things that I was hearing. I was willing to get a sponsor and do 90 and 90 and listen to what you had to say, but I didn't apply what you had to say. And that was a huge, huge part of the beginning of my recovery, was that I knew where NA meetings were, and I knew who you guys were, and I knew that your lives were great, and I knew that my life was getting better, but I wasn't giving myself the freedom of choice and the ability to say, maybe I really need to just change all my old behavior and my old way of thinking and try a new way of life. And that's what led me to going back to jail, to losing jobs, to not having places to stay, to having to start all over again and throwing away everything I'd worked really hard for a couple of years of my life. And it was the pain that brought me to the point where I had to look at myself in the mirror and become desperately aware of the fact that I was an addict and that there was a solution and that maybe you guys didn't know what you were talking about. And this chapter tells us that relapse is a reality. It can and it does happen. And for me, that relapse was what it took for me to wake up and start applying principles in my daily life, to start really working steps and not just writing answers to questions. Because I'm the kind of person that took the flat book and the basic text and said, oh, this is the answer, I'm going to write it down because I was really good in school and I can do this too. And so I put the answers down that I was supposed to put down, not the ones that were actually real for me. I could sit down and tell you what the spiritual principles were behind step one, but that didn't mean I was applying them in my daily life. I could tell you the definitions of integrity and the reason that you have to have tolerance in this program, but I wasn't acting in integrity and I wasn't applying tolerance towards the people in this fellowship. So I definitely wasn't doing it to people outside this fellowship. There were a lot of not yets for me. that point in time in my life. There was a lot of, I didn't do this, or I wasn't homeless under a bridge, or I wasn't in a position where I'd never been to school and I couldn't get a job. But there was a magical moment of clarity for me where I recognized the fact that if I didn't stop with all the tools at my disposal, with all the people that were trying to help me find a new way of life, for all of you that loved me until I couldn't love myself, then there was not going to be a me to love anymore. Because I was in the throes of self-destruction and self-sabotage, and every time something good happened in my life, I was a lot more likely to want to use over it or go destroy it, because I didn't know how to deal with the good as much as I didn't know how to deal with the bad. This chapter is also the chapter in our basic text that says we have never seen a person who lives the Narcotics Anonymous program relapse. And the key part in that entire sentence is lives. Not learns, not knows, not repeats, not quotes, not shows up, not just goes to meetings, lives. Learns how to live the 12 steps. Learns how to live the spiritual principles. Learns how to apply the 12 traditions. If you stick around long enough, you'll figure out what the 12 concepts mean. And for me, I had to really take a look at how to live this program. So here's what I did. I realized that I couldn't save my ass and my face at the same time. And that comes out of the basic text. I realized that I had to walk back into the rooms where you guys thought I had it all together, or knew I was struggling, or I hadn't seen you in 6 months. And I will literally tell you guys, and this may be the first time I've ever said this in public, at this convention, in this location, 7 years ago, I had just had a week clean, and I hadn't told anybody, and I hadn't tested positive at drug court yet. I hadn't gone back to jail for 30 days. I hadn't done a lot of things, but I showed up at this convention knowing I had been high as a kite 4 days before and had to walk in this room and see people that I had served on committees with the year before in Athens. Terrified. But I knew that my ass had to get back in this room and back in this meeting, and some of the things that were said at that convention 7 years ago are what made me give this program another chance. And so I served my jail time, and I called my sponsor, and I decided that maybe I didn't know what I was talking about, and maybe those first 4 steps that I had started working weren't working, and that I needed to go back and do those again, and maybe my old behavior and my old thinking was what brought me right back to this point. And so I got real honest with myself and got real willing to do some things, and got real willing to do things as simple as saying, thanks for that suggestion, but I'm not willing to take it, and I want to be honest with you about that. And I did that, and I continued to do that, and I continued to put pen to paper, and I continued to build my network, because the hardest thing for me was that I had been in rehab in one place and then went back to another place, and although I was inundated with people, with women in my life, because I didn't have a choice. There was like 6 of them in my room. There were 12 of them in my house. I had to be around these women at all times, whether I wanted to be or not. I had a network. Recovery had given me a built-in, required network. And I got back to where I had my old playmates and playgrounds, and I didn't have y'all, and I didn't want to meet y'all. And I didn't reach out to people, and I used my sponsor, who was an hour and a half away, to co-sign my BS, because she wasn't there to keep me accountable, and I hadn't met enough women or used enough women in this program to continue to keep me accountable. And so I started to see these ways that I had gone wrong. I had stopped doing all this stuff that had helped me get to where I'd been, and I started to fall back into old behavior and old patterns, and it got me high. So the first thing I did was go, need a home group. And I started listening to suggestions of home groups that had women with strong clean time in recovery, and I made the effort to go to those meetings. And I drove 45 to 50 minutes to an hour to meetings sometimes, because the ones that were 10 minutes from my house didn't give me what I needed. And every NA room, everywhere across the world, gives you the same thing. But sometimes I have to drive a little bit to get what I need to recover. So I can share my experience, strength, and hope with you on any given day, but I needed to hear it from some women who had done it for 15 or 20 years. Because I was that sick, and I needed to recover that much, and I recognized that. And so I started making that effort, and I started shutting up in meetings because my sponsor told me that maybe you need to just listen for the next 90 days to what these people have to say to you instead of sharing what you think you need to say. And so I did that, and I took that suggestion. And then I made that my home group. And then I got involved with serving on this CPC committee at 6 months clean. And then somebody in my home group said, hey, while you're there, why don't you represent us as our group service representative? And I got so deeply involved in service at that point in time in my life that there was absolutely no way that I wasn't around people who saw me all the time that could keep me accountable. And my network went from very little to huge overnight. And I carried around notebooks and service positions, and I finally felt like I was a part of this fellowship, and y'all got to see me at my very worst, and y'all got to watch me grow every year into something a little bit more. And as I didn't believe in myself, y'all continued to believe in me. And as I started to believe in myself a little bit more, y'all started seeing that, and y'all were able to move on to the next newcomer who needed somebody to believe in them. And that's how this program works. And so I know today, for me, you can be a one-chip wonder. You can pick up one white chip, and I've seen plenty of people come in, and they've hit their bottom, and they've stopped digging, and that was where it all stopped, because life was so bad for them that they had that gift of desperation that they never wanted to pick up again. I am grateful, because I don't deserve to have a second chance, but I got one. And I know plenty of people who unfortunately didn't get a second chance when they relapsed. And it kills me. And it breaks my heart, and I've been around long enough to see that happen. But I have a God in my understanding who knew that there was still more to my story to write, and gave me the ability to remain open-minded to the fact that this way of life could work for me. And so, gratefully, this fellowship has provided me the opportunity to keep working, keep giving back, and share the opportunity with you guys that relapse is an opportunity for growth, and it's not something to be ashamed of, as long as you use it as a tool to catapult yourself to going forward. And with that, I'll turn it over to Rosemary. Thanks for letting me share.
My name's Rosemary. I was telling a friend before this, I was like, I feel like so not prepared for this. And they brought it to my attention that it's really just my experience. All I can share with y'all is my experience. And he asked me what my experience was with relapse and recovery. And so I think that I'm not a one white chip wonder either. I did come to Narcotics Anonymous. And here's what's really funny. My first time in Narcotics Anonymous, I was 16 years old. I lied to everyone in that meeting and told them that I was 18 because my motives were that sick. I'm not kidding. I wanted to be able to like do what I wanted to do, and so I let everybody believe that I was an adult in that room. So so right off the bat, I was off to a good start. And I came around for a while, probably like a year, in and out, you know, 30 days, 60 days. And then I met a guy, which is really why I was there. I wanted attention. I came to Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I saw, oh, I can get a lot of attention here. And that's what I did. And so I manipulated and I played the, I was, back then, here's the reality. I look around this room like, there's a lot of young people in here. This was like, I'm 31, so this was, I don't know, a lot of years ago. And back then there weren't a ton of young people, you know? So the people I was spending time with were like older. Much older. They were so old, they were like my age now. but that's how I felt then. But you know, I mean, I was like, yeah, I was a fucking kid. And so I manipulated these people, and they did, they took me under their wing, and I look back on it and like they knew what I was doing, but they like saw what I couldn't even see, I'm sure, you know, which is that like I really did belong here. And I had the opportunity to meet some people with a lot of clean time, some who are still around, some who have passed on. And I hold on, I cherish those memories, but the reality was I was nowhere near ready. I hadn't even really got started yet. And so I met someone and I was gonna save him. And that's one thing that a lesson that I've taken away is that I spent the next 7 years trying to save him and just deeper and deeper and deeper into my addiction. I mean, my disease was just like, I mean, it was just strong. And you know, the unmanageability that we all like know about, like my relapse that I think about when I think about my relapse is really, like, I use that term loosely because I never worked a step. I wasn't really here. I wasn't really in this for the right reasons, you know? Like, I just went out and, like, continued what I was doing. I just, like, I was taking short breaks my first time around. I wasn't actually recovering. I wasn't actually trying. I was wasting people's time. And so I went back out. And through the course of that, though, and I think about this sometimes, like, during that period of my life, like, I used with one of my sponsors, you know, a girl who, and that, like, when I think back on it now, like, that's some, like, fucked up shit, you know, but when I think about why I picked her the first time to be my sponsor, it's because she wasn't about anything. She would co-sign my bullshit, we could, like, be sick together. That's why I picked her to be my sponsor to begin with. And so, you know, all of those yes, all of those things that separated me from y'all my first time around, all the things that made me different, that made me unique, I would never do that. That's some sick shit. I did it, you know, and I became lonely, and I became desperate, and completely spiritually dead, you know, and I didn't even know it. I hold on to, like, that last time that I used, that, like, last morning where I was basically homeless. Like, I had this shock thing that I, like, lived in out behind my grandmother's house, and you know, because she would have loved me to death, bless her heart. And I remember, like, asking her to pee for me because I wanted to go to probation and pass a drug test. And I was like, please pee for me because I'm going to try it different this time. This time I'm going to show up, because I always just ran from probation. I was like the queen of non-report warrants. And so I was going to do it differently this time. And this time I was going to go and try to pass the test, because that's not their job to know, like, what I'm down there doing. And she did it, you know, like, I could manipulate her to doing anything for me. And she did it. And I remember just feeling so incredibly desperate. Like, I was in, like, a bottom of a deep pool, and I was just trying desperately to, like, get somewhere and get out, like, doggy paddling. That's how I can, like, equate, like, I felt like I was drowning that morning that I went to probation. And I hold on to that feeling. I hold on to that today, because, like, that morning, I have never in my life experienced such loneliness as I felt that day. And you know, my consequences brought me back to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And here's what's really cool. So when I get back to NA, there are people who were around my first time that were still here, like, 10 years later. And I remember looking at some of them and thinking, like, if that dude can stay clean, I can stay clean. I think he's in the room right now. I don't know if he wants to identify himself. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, and I walked up to that first meeting, and he knew my name. He remembered me. And that was, like, really, really powerful. I remember thinking, like, wow, like, you can do this. You can stay clean. But see, the difference between this time around for me and, like, when I picked up this white chip and, like, all those years ago when I wasn't serious, it's that gift of desperation that I came in with. Like, I absolutely saw, I came in a person that I don't like. I was so ugly. I was so scared. I was so capable of doing things I never thought I'd be capable of doing. And so I brought that in with me. And so that's what I think about when I think about relapse. But then I also think about, I've been back a little while now, and, you know, my disease manifests itself in many areas of my life. And it hasn't, sorry, I tapped the table. I did the thing I wasn't supposed to do. Anyway, there's a recording, by the way. That wasn't, like, completely random. There's a recording of the recorder. But, So anyway, I digress. So whenever I stay clean a while, I realize, like, the longer I stay clean, the more I realize my disease manifests itself in all these different areas of my life. And the guilt and the shame that I thought I'd really, really addressed in like, step work, and, like, I got to, like, the root of that shit, you know, but like, the longer I stay clean, the more I learn about myself. And I love it, like, how I thought I really knew who I was and what I wanted, you know, like, 3-4 years clean. And today, where I'm at in my recovery, I'm just in a place where I don't know. I don't have a clue what I want or who I am or what I want out of my future. It's just where I'm at today. Recovery is fluid for me, and it's an uphill journey. And I'm in a season of, like, change. just where I'm at. I've had a lot go on in my life recently. This year has been, I mean, we're through the other side of it now, which is big. But that line where it says, you know, like, we hold on to abstinence no matter what, no matter fucking what. Because I had some stuff going on that was, I've never felt more powerless in my life. Like, my son had to have this surgery, and they took him back, you know, and it was like this pretty major surgery. And I've never in my life felt more powerless than I did that morning. And when I looked around the room, in that waiting room, Narcotics Anonymous was there. People from my network had shown up. And there's a line in this chapter. Let me find it. I'm not Facebooking. Hold on. Hold, please. It says, we come here powerless, and the power that we seek comes to us through other people in Narcotics Anonymous. But we must reach out for it. Now clean and in the fellowship, we need to keep ourselves surrounded by others who know us well. We need each other. Narcotics Anonymous is a fellowship of survival. And one of its advantages is that it places us in intimate, regular contact with the very people who can best understand and help us in our recovery. Good ideas and good intentions do not help if we fail to put them into action. Reaching out is the beginning of the struggle that will set us free. It will break down the walls that imprison us. A symptom of our disease is alienation, and honest sharing will free us to recover. And that's one of the things that I've struggled with the most in my recovery, is honest sharing. It's telling you people, like, I am honestly not okay. I'm honestly scared to death. I honestly don't know, like, what I'm going to do, you know, if something goes wrong. That's what I felt like. And then I look back in my recovery, and I'm like, I felt like that a lot, and I was never brave enough to say it out loud. My ego, my pride, all that bullshit stood in the way of me being honest and letting everyone, like, get to know me. But luckily, there were a few people who powered through that shit and, like, pushed through that wall and actually got to know me and can call me out whenever I'm not quite right, you know? And that power, yeah, it's like we were powerless, were. Because that day in that waiting room, waiting on the doctors to come out and tell me, like, if everything went okay, you know, I was surrounded by people who loved me, who were there for me, who would just, like, walk laps with me around the hospital and bring me coffee and just talk about anything but what was going on with me, because that's what I needed at that time, was to not think about it. And that is the power of Narcotics Anonymous, and that is the power of, like, letting people get to know me. That is my recovery in action, because, like, I can go to a room between 8 and 9, and I can, like, stay clean and, like, look like I'm applying some shit, but, like, can I leave that room and go out and actually apply recovery in my life? Like, can I go to work and be honest? Can I not cheat on my husband? You know, these are the things that, like, I, like, can I apply this? Am I actually applying what I'm learning here in my daily life? And so, you know, that nuclear blast, I think it says that, okay, so, like, it doesn't have to be, like, I relapsed once, but, like, I can watch your nuclear blast and hopefully learn from it, you know, because I had a sponsee, and we built this relationship, right? Like, she lived south of Atlanta, and we had this phone relationship, and I met her because her husband traveled across the country with me and some other addicts in a van, and, like, I just felt, you know, we had this relationship. She asked me to be her sponsor, and it was really interesting because she had worked more steps than me. She felt like she just wasn't getting what she needed, and so we started the steps over together. And during the course of that relationship, her husband went back out. It was ugly. Like, she was letting him back in the house, and she was just not hearing what I was saying, and she did not like what I had to say. Like, dude, you gotta, like, distance yourself. You were not gonna save him. Trust me, I know. He will take you back out before you will get him clean. And I told her, and I told her, and I told her. And she did not like me very much because of it. And today, her husband, who went back out, is alive, and she is dead. You know, and that is what I know about, like, relapse, is that, like, her, you know, she had two children that she left behind, and like, she had sponsees, and she had this, like, life, and then she used, and she died. And that's the reality of this disease. That's the reality of this disease, you know, that, like, My disease wants me dead. It doesn't care how it kills me. It doesn't care if I die, like, using and alone, or if I, like, eat myself to death, or if I commit suicide. Like, my disease wants me dead. And the only thing that I have, like, fight this disease is recovery. It's you people. It's the rooms. It's the 12 steps. It's the 12 traditions. It's not allowing, not isolating myself, even when I want nothing to do with y'all. You know, my feelings will eventually pass. I do not have to use because I'm feeling some shit. These are things I'm telling myself. You know, I have to tell myself that sometimes. Like, I don't have to act out. I don't have to self-destruct because I'm feeling some things. I always joke around, like, people get clean and get fucking sensitive. But, you know, I used to, like, steal from my grandmother, and now I'm sensitive. But I mean that, you know. It's like, I ran around like a fucking tornado for most of my life. And, you know, today I just try not to do that. I can easily throw a grenade into my life that I built and run away. Blow it up and run away. And if I'm not vigilant with my recovery, I will. My instinct, my nature is not like be happy, joyous, and free, share with you people, serve others. I'm selfish, self-centered, and afraid a lot of the time. And I don't have to be alone in that. It's hard for me, though, sometimes to not be alone. You know, it's hard to, like, come and tell people that you respect. Like, looking around, I'm like, oh, my God. It's intimidating a little bit. I have so much respect for so many people's recovery. And like, my ego tells me that, and my disease tells me that, don't let them know that you're, like, not, like, all together all the time. But I'm not. And that's my solution. This is my, you know, rigorous honesty is the antidote to my disease thinking. And I've been in this funky place lately. You know, things are changing and things are moving, and that's really uncomfortable. That's an uncomfortable place for me to be, but it's necessary. If I get stagnant, and then I start going downhill, and the next thing you know, I fucked it up again. For sure. I don't want to die high. I mean, I'm going to die, but I don't want to die high. I don't want people to one day be like, yeah, you remember Rosemary? Yeah, it's a shame. Saw that shit coming. Uh-uh. I don't want to be the one to better, you know, and here's the thing, like, you always hear this, well, some addicts die so others may live. That's fucking bullshit. It says in our basic text that no addict need die from the horrors of addiction. You know? So yes, relapse is a reality, but it's not mandatory. I have a choice today. Today I choose to stay clean. I choose to apply some shit as best I can. Man, the freedom that comes over time in this program, it's like nothing I've ever experienced. You know, I can choose to, like, keep it, and I can choose to grow that, or I can choose to give it all away. Because I never lost anything. I gave it all away. For sure. I'm grateful that, you know, over time, as I peel back the layers, I'm learning how to be more and more honest with others and myself. It's not always easy. I love to bullshit. I love, love, love to make things seem like they're better than they are and to sugarcoat some shit for no reason at all. Because it sounds better. But I don't have to today. I don't even know if I stayed on topic. But that's all I've got. Thanks for having me.
So, one last thought on recovery and relapse and the whole thing of sitting here thinking about what Rosemary shared is that when I relapsed and came back in, I was full of shame. Like, I was full of shame in what I'd done, shame in the awareness of how it happened, scared to walk back in here until I discovered that y'all respected the courage it took for me to walk back in here and tell y'all that I'd relapsed. Because as an addict, I want to get high, and it may not be on drugs, but I want to get high on new shoes, mm-hmm. or I want to get high on chocolate cake, or I want to get high on, man, I want to get runner's high all the time. Like, I'm constantly looking for new 5Ks to run so I can go get that feeling today. It's just part of who I am. And as an addict, it is a natural tendency to want to get high, and there's absolutely nothing shameful about that.
That's right.
And so if you have relapsed, or if you beat yourself up, or if you see somebody walk back through those doors, then I just really encourage you guys to take on the perspective of how much courage it takes to walk back into a Narcotics Anonymous meeting after getting high and knowing that you need that help. Because if you hadn't have done that for me, I wouldn't be sitting here today. Thanks for letting us share.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks.